If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Are you thinking about starting a podcast but don't know where to start? Let me take a second to tell you about Anchor by Spotify. It's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast across a plethora of listening platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all the big ones. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one place. And best of all, completely free. If you're thinking about starting a podcast, do yourself a favor and check out anchor.fm or download the app to get started. Hey everyone, if you're enjoying Inquiries of Our Reality, I'd really appreciate it if you could drop a review or a rating and I'll give you a shout out on the show. While you're at it, come join the Telegram group and follow the show on Instagram and across social media. If you'd like to support the show, check me out over on Patreon for early access to Inquiries of Our Reality and Big Dumb Inquiries, which is the Swapcast show I co-host with Kyle Rainey of the Big Dumb Podcast. If you'd like to pick up some merch, come check out the merch store. If you want to help me out to upgrade my equipment and pump out even more awesome content for you guys, come donate over on Anchor.
Or Ko-fi.
And last but not least, if anyone is interested in being a guest on the show, sponsoring the show, has a topic they want covered, or you feel you have something to contribute to the show, send me an email at inquiriesofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com. All the links I mentioned are in the show description. Just tap or click the Linktree link to be directed. Thanks, everyone. I appreciate you, and I couldn't be doing this without you. Now enjoy the show.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Inquiries of Our Reality with Shane Jones.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 49th episode of Inquiries of Our Reality. Today with me, I have a very special co-host, my number one co-host from Big Dumb Inquiries. I got Kyle Rainey.
What's going on, man? Kyle with the Big Dumb Podcast here. Glad to be here. You've heard me on Big Dumb Inquiries, and I'm glad to be part of Inquiries of Our Reality. And yeah, if anyone out there ever needs a co-host, just hit me up. I am your guy. Our guests on the show today, if one of you can't make it to a show, hit me up. I'm the resident stand-in co-host. So just hit me up. I'm always down, but happy to be here, Shane. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. And today I bring back my first time with guests coming back for a second time. I have Bill and Adam from 13 Questions. How's it going, guys?
Phenomenally.
Well, we answer in tandem all the time.
It's always the fun of having a co-host. You got to like figure out your flow.
Yeah, it's fun though.
So I guess for the people that didn't listen to part one or, started listening a little bit later on, whatever, either or, why don't you guys give them a brief summary of like what you guys do over at your show?
13 Questions is what I've kind of termed it as an ongoing anthropological study on what it is to be a man in today's digital world. And that is the 13th question. We ask the same 13 questions relatively to each guest. So the 13th is, what does it mean to be a man? And there's a little double entendre because it can be a man or man as in like a human being. And then, we just really want to emphasize the wisdom that is passed on from our elders, and we're all products of those that came before us. So it's nice to get some of that, some of those practical pearls of wisdom, and kind of ingrain them in the annals of what is becoming 13 Questions.
Yeah, and I had a lot of fun popping on your guys' show too. So I guess a good starting point today, because you guys have probably never been asked this. What is it to be a man to you guys?
Well, Shane, before you get into that, I just had a quick question for you guys. So you ask the same 13 questions on with every guest that you have on, and you're kind of logging that as you go
Yeah, the questions do modify and kind of evolve along the way.
Okay.
And so some have cycled in and cycled out. But, you know, for the most part, yeah, it is a, I'd call it an evolving list. But, you know, at its core, it's the same.
But you keep it to 13, right? Okay. Cool. Good to know. Good to know. That's interesting. And then before Shane's question, I just want to ask you guys, what are like your top three questions that you guys ask people? Because I'm curious. I haven't listened to your show yet.
I can tell you some of my favorite questions.
Sure. Yeah. Do a couple and then we'll go on to Shane's questions. Sorry,
Shane. How's this? I'll give you my two favorite.
Okay.
What institution of society or structural aspect of modern life would you change given the chance?
Oh, that's a good one. Okay.
They got some good questions. They're really solid, man.
And what's the next one? What's your next favorite?
So many. If I were to ask your best friend, what is the one thing they would say you need to work on the most and why?
Oh, dude, that's like the, like, I always struggle with, I went on a show recently, Speed Bumps with Ellie, and she said, what's like the best thing about you? And I was like, fuck, because it's easy to like degrade ourselves, right? But it's hard to speak highly of yourself. So that's, I mean, a different question, but still in the same vein. It's hard to talk about yourself in that kind of way. So kudos to you guys for asking those questions. But Shane, go ahead and ask what you were going to say. I'm sorry to cut you off. I just wanted little more context.
I was just going to say pretty much I listened to the episode before I went on her show with you on there. And I had to think about that same question all day to be able to figure out two solid answers to it. So that is a very strange thing that it's really, really hard to compliment yourself.
Oh, it's hard to take compliments too. As a man, do you guys find that, Bill and Adam, do you guys, I've noticed, you know, it's hard to take compliments even from like your loved ones, you know, or your significant other, like compliments are just, as a man, it's like you don't expect it and it's rare and it's hard to take in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You always remember it though, when you do get compliments.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure. That makes a lasting impression. And it can be, I mean, it's awkward more than anything else, I would say, but just, you know, it's please and thank you, or thank you, I guess, not really please, but yeah, just be polite and it just, you know, try to make it less awkward.
I'll tell you, I don't ever feel really awkward though, if it's something that in the societal norm is not something that's done, because myself, I try to give credit and, you know, compliment people where it's due, just because, you know, it's one of those things, look, if you really impacted me and affect me, I want you to know, because if I impacted somebody in that way, you know, I'd like to know as well. So, you know, I, although I you know, would have a hard time. It's like, why are you, you know, thanking me for opening a door? You know, you're here. I'm not going to slam it in your face. you know, depending on the circumstances. Yeah. You know, I'm grateful when people do it. Cause I'm like, all right, you know, like, you know, we're making some headway in the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's starting to evolve too, because I feel like it's starting to get to a point where maybe it's not as awkward, like just being co-hosts on the other show, like Kyle and I compliment each other all day and stuff like that. And it's not as weird, but
it's super
like,
gay. It's super gay. Very homoerotic, the things that Shane and I say to each other. Not intentionally. It's just how it comes out, because it's like, hey, bro, I appreciate you and you do great work. It's like, okay, that's, unless it's your boss telling you that, it sounds kind of gay. Nothing against, you know, gay people or anything like that. But I'm just like, when you're talking to your bro, it's hard to do that. You know what I mean? Like there's only a handful of guys. Like I always try to like tell my friends that I love them. So it's like, love you, bro. But if I go any farther than that, like with any detail, it's like both of us feel weird. It is a little awkward, but it's important. You got to let people know how you feel, because you never know what's going to happen. You know,
that's what I go by.
Let's be honest. You know, you're reading between the lines. Your buddy to feels the emotion coming through. So everybody compliments in their own way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That is true. You're kind of complimenting just by being a good friend or a good person to somebody else, in a sense too. It's like an indirect way of complimenting somebody. So,
yeah, I mean, just your I find oftentimes just your presence with your friends can make a, you know, can say a lot. You know, if you are just there for them, or you reach out to them and maybe don't even talk about anything serious, but just like, you know, hey, what's up, dude? What are you doing? Oh, did you see this movie, or did you do this or whatever? That goes a long way for guys in particular. You know what I mean? Like girls, when they talk to each other, it's very, you know, very, very personal, very, intimate in a sense, like very detailed. But with guys, it's like, hey, what are you doing today? Oh, nothing. Just going to work. You know, it's bullshit. My boss is an asshole. And it's like, oh, yeah, me too. Cool. And it's like, just that can go a long way.
Yeah, you're not wrong, dude. It's just that little interaction ends up going farther than what you realize it goes.
Absolutely.
But I definitely want to hop back into that question because I'm not sure if you guys have ever been asked that. What's I guess each of you, because Kyle's never really been asked that either. What makes a man in today's society to you guys?
Yeah, I can go first. I've actually, Adam and I have both done all the questions on an episode on 13 questions. I'm number 38. I don't remember what Adam's episode number is, but for my question was, or my answer was personal responsibility. And I have it written down here in my notes and I'll just read it. It says accepting the role of a man in the continuous effort to act as such. And then I said, no, our society has no initiation into manhood anymore. So I wanted to emphasize the some archetypes found in a book. I can't remember the author, but it's King Warrior, Magician, Lover. And so I wanted to emphasize those four aspects, especially the warrior aspect. And this is something that Dr. Bear mentioned during his interview with us, and the warrior aspect of the internal warrior, like fighting the shadow on your inside and doing the inner work, because, you know, with the reflective nature of the universe, you're just going to get back whatever you're feeding out into it. So we want to take care of our spiritual side too, as well as, you know, being a warrior on the 3D realm is, you know, protecting and providing and whatnot. And so other than that, I had written down no cognitive dissonance. So just being able to question everything, you know, especially authority and critical thinking, you know, learn how to think, not just letting others telling you like what to think. So that was my answer I had.
That last part was key for sure too. Not thinking for yourself and not letting others think for you. Like that's very important. I feel like a lot of people have lost track of that in today's world. How about you, Kyle, going down the line?
What does it mean to be a man? I mean, I think it's however you identify and you know, just how you feel. I'm just kidding. That's ridiculous. I guess I'd say that kind of going off of what Bill said there. Personal responsibility, you know, just owning up to your actions, whether they're mistakes or successes or failures or whatever, just owning up to it and moving on. And, you know, for me personally, it's taking care of business, however that is for anyone out there, just getting your stuff done. And I mean, it's not easy being a man either. You know what I mean? I mean, it's relatively easy, I guess, but it's not an easy feat to, you know, be good at it. And I'm still learning. I'm still young, trying to figure this stuff out, but you know, I'm about to get married. So I'm hoping that, you know, really taking care of my significant other and hopefully our children will give me some more insight as I move forward. Cause right now, I guess I'm still a young man. You know what I mean? I don't know if age has anything to do with it, but I try my best just to not be an asshole. You know, and also be strong, like you said, Shane, not succumbing to other people's ways of thinking, and not letting other people tell me what to do. Not that I can't take advice or suggestions, but it's I learned how to be a man from my dad, who, you know, taught me well. So that's, I guess that's what it means to me. But I had a question for Bill there, but I'll come back to it. Adam, did you have what was your answer to that question? That's a deep question, man. It's hard to get into.
It's been a long time. I don't remember what my answer was, or even necessarily if it's going to be the same per se. But I can say that it's just as I grow up, I see that I used to be the wimp. I used to be the weaker of my friends. I used to be, and as I'm growing older, I'm seeing that just, I didn't get that much stronger. It's just the personality, the way that people think, their determination, wanting to take the easier path. And I have no problem taking the harder path, the riskier path. I don't mind building up, you know, thicker skin. You know, I know that if I get sick, my immune system gets stronger. So I don't necessarily want to avoid the sickness per se of what any kind. So I'll take that risk, you know, knowing that, you know, one day that may meet my demise, but until then, I'm building up thicker. And so just that mentality to everything, you just don't see it as much. So to me, you know, being a man in the world today is, you know, just doing the thing that you should be doing that you feel you should, you know, like the opening the door, being there for your family, you know, all of the other things that just aren't necessarily the easy way out. They're just, you know, the thing that you know you need to do and then just doing it. So, you know, none of us are perfect. You know, we're not, we're all failing that task along the way, but I don't know. I just, being a man today, I don't know. It's, I think Bill said it the best.
Well, I will just say I've been watching. I've been rewatching Band of Brothers, that HBO series about the airborne division in World War II, and just, you know, just based on that, and of course, you know, we have stories from the veterans of those wars and things like that. I think it's what being a man is has changed drastically over the generations. I mean, because I look at these guys, and obviously it's a TV, but it's a TV show, but it's based on real events. Like, I don't think that could happen today. I don't think we have enough men that would be willing to do the things that those guys did. And it's interesting because all of these guys, most people in soldiers in World War II were just regular people before the war. I mean, they were teachers and, you know, businessmen and, you know, factory workers and stuff. And they were put in a situation where they had to step up, and they almost did it without question, you know, and they really did some heroic and horrific and, you know, very daring things just that an average man would never think that he would do. And so I think just because of the changing of the times, and, you know, thank God for world peace for the most part, that we don't have to deal with that on that large of a scale. But it does change what it means to be a man, I think. I think that the standards have changed. I think the expectations have changed. But it's interesting, as much as the expectations have changed, like, in general, like, oh, you don't have to be a tough guy. You don't have to do this or whatever. You don't, you know, screw the women, screw the kids, just do your own thing. As much as that's a part of it, you know, the expectations on the individual level are still there, right? Like, if you get into a relationship and you're just a loser, piece of shit, you know, don't do anything, it's probably not going to work out. You know what I mean? The women, even though, you know, women are moving, you know, they're in the workforce, they want to, you know, be the boss, you know, I'm like the boss bitch or whatever, that whole the third wave feminism. If you don't do that, if you aren't the caregiver, it can be an issue in the relationship. And I'm not, that's a very broad generalization, but it is something I've noticed, not with me in particular, but just in general, like, you know, people as progressive as they may be, they still want their man to be able to provide for them and, you know, take care of them and stuff like that. And we're lacking that in some aspect.
It's one of those things too, that it's like, everybody wants to destroy the whole idea of gender roles, but in a sense, gender roles are kind of needed according to nature. Like, even looking at any other animal in the animal kingdom, like, every one of the genders has like a defined kind of role that they do. And because of that, it's like yin and yang, and it counterbalances each other and works things out. Right now we have too much of like a mix where it's like, they're saying, you know, like toxic masculinity, however you want to word it, but it just kind of seems like females for the most part are trying to like take on like the role that like males have been doing for a long time. So like, the reason why they're starting to feel that, I guess, is probably because there is like the masculinity from the guys already, and then they're trying to act like they're more masculine, and it's just kind of creating this all out, just everybody angry and wanting to fight with each other because they don't have that counterbalance of like the peaceful energy, which would typically be like the female energy, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I see nothing wrong with, you know, if my woman made tons of money and I could be a stay at home, you know, home, what's it? home taker, home care. What's the word? Home giver. I don't know the word. But if I could, you know, chill at home all day and raise the kids and the dogs and cook and clean and fuck hell yeah, dude, I'd love to do that. But, and actually my fiance does make more money than me, but not enough to, for me to not work. But, I think it's changed. I think there's more of a, you know, kind of a middle ground, but there does need to be, I don't know if the balance is necessarily in those gender roles, but just the responsibilities of being in a relationship, raising a family, those things have balanced out per se. You know what I mean? Like,
but I mean, there's counterbalance too, because it's like you were saying, that's like there's kind of like roles in a specific way, and they don't have to be played out exactly in that way, but those tasks mm-hmm. still need to be done, and you yeah. have to be able to like interchange and mash together to create like that full balance. If yeah. that makes sense.
The roles are still there, but who's filling them is changing. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but when you neglect one side of that, you know, regardless of what gender or role you're filling, if something's not being done, it's going to cause an issue. Have you, Adam or Bill, have you guys noticed that in society? I mean, maybe not in your personal lives, but have you noticed this kind of pattern of just things being shifted around?
Yeah. Well, I also think we're, in addition, I mean, we're living in a much softer world in America, you know, with hardship, with, you know, even in the times today of what people have experienced in, you know, past, you know, we don't have the same experiences as people. And I think of it in the same way where they've done studies on people who were, you know, involved with starving events, you know, famines where there was no food. And then they follow their children and they see, you know, how do they react to this? And they find that, you know, their children are much better adapted than people who haven't experienced the starvation to go through that. So I think that, you know, just the entire experience of a human and how you have to live and the way that life has gotten easier, you know, to where it's, I mean, my examples are always like clean water and salt. You know, salt was worth more than gold, but yet anybody can go into, you know, a fast food restaurant on any corner and get water and salt for free. And so there's all these just levels of change that we've had in the world that have just, you know, you're not constantly trying to survive, procure, you know, make it through, you know, survive against, you know, the environment, the world, the animals. Nobody worries about wolves. So, yeah, so it's we're different. And I think that that just impacts all aspects of modern life. And to the flip side, you know, if something crazy happens, if this world changes, you know, we also have DNA inside of it that's going to open up. Just look at like Wim Hof and his breathing techniques and what he can teach people to do. You know, there will be people that grow up fast. The kid who grows up in, you know, the hood, who, you know, has a tough life, walk in the street, bad stuff happens to. But you know what? When they're older, man, they know like they can survive in an environment where if you were just dropped in as an adult today, you never would. But yet that child is better off than you in a sense. So, yeah, I don't know.
It's kind of like the, what's that saying? Tough men create easy times, and then soft men create hard times. Like however that works.
Yeah, it's a cycle. I think it's hard men create good times. Good times create soft men. Soft men create hard times, and then hard times create hard men, and it just repeats. And I think we're coming on the tail end of. I think we are. On the tail end of the soft times, right? So soft times breed soft men. So I think we're kind of in this transition period of soft times going into hard times, because I don't care what side of the political spectrum you're on, look at the last 2 years up until this moment, and shit has not been great. You know what I mean?
People have definitely toughened up though in that time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We're in a transition period. And I think, you know, people in our age group, I'd say we're all, you know, 20s and 30s, we have been in that kind of middle ground of the, you know, the former generation and the new generation. We're kind of that in between. So I think we're in a unique position where I'd say half of our generation is going to be those soft people. And the other half is going to have to be those harder people. And, you know, hopefully we can create some good times out of it, but I don't think we're there yet. I think we're entering the hard times. Things are going to be not great going forward, but not that you can't be successful or thrive or you know, persevere, but it's going to take some adaptation. As Adam said, there's a lot of things that, I love what you said about our DNA. There's some memory there. There's some instincts there that are going to kick in if they haven't already. And you're going to start, changing things. It's I compare it to growing up poor, right? When you grow up poor, you look at the world a little differently. And then when you perhaps enter adulthood or a time in your life where you have a little bit of money, those kind of, and I hate to say this, but people know what I'm talking about, those poor people tendencies kind of stick around, right? Like not wasting food, or, you know, taking a old pickle jar and using that as a cup instead of just throwing the empty jar away. I mean, there's lots of little things that I did when I was a kid that I've tried to stop doing now, because I'm not necessarily, I mean, obviously on a compared to others, I'm poor, but
wait until you have kids though, and then you'll go back to it. That's what I did.
I'm just saying, but those things kind of kick in when you least expect it. So I don't know. I'm just hoping that things will, I guess stagnation is probably the worst of it when you don't know what's going on. And we're kind of in that period right now of what is going on. I don't know whether to run, to hide, or to, you know.
Humans are highly adaptive. And the amazing thing, it's like you said, we do carry that memory through us. If you've ever been anywhere and there's a shadow of like a helicopter and you get that instinctual feeling to duck and drop, when was the last time you or one of your ancestors had the instinct to duck from some creature that could attack you that would be flying? It's been a very long time, definitely within our lifetimes, definitely not on this continent within many lifetimes, but yet you still have that DNA built into you. So I love looking at like the Wim Hof and what you can open up in epigenetics, because then I just look at other animals like a pig. Man, you put a pig into a pen and it is adapted to its environment. You let that pig out for a few months and next thing you know, it turns into a boar. Its body changes. It ain't going back. It's got like it grows tusks and fur, muscle changes.
Its snout elongates.
Exactly. And so what happens when you domesticate animals? I think, you know, there could be an aspect of humanity that has been domesticated, and just based on our environment, you take a goldfish, put it into a fish, it's not going to grow any bigger based on the size of that container till you move it. Plants do the same, not just in size. There's so many aspects of humans. And then, you know, I add on to that evolution, because we know everything's evolving and changing. And so many people don't imagine that. What if that's everything, including government, society, ways of thinking, that those are all evolving too? And yeah, it's not going to work the way that we did things before. And this next transition, it's going to be a collapse. Sometimes the forest has to burn down in order for you to have the new growth. And in the same way that you have like a chrysalis, if you have a butterfly, something that's converting, it goes from a caterpillar. If you go into the middle stage and you look at it, it's a gelatinous glob. There's no cohesion. It looks like a mess. It looks like nothing's going to come from it. It's chaos. But if you let it sit long enough, beauty comes from that and it springs eternal to something new. So I think we may as a society be in one of those moments where we can't see the forest through the trees, and a butterfly is going to emerge sometime. You know, this earth's been here for a long time. Humans have been here for a long time. Some part of this is going to be there for a resurgence.
Yeah. Adam, I'm sure you've heard of the Great Reset, right? The, you know, World Economic Forum,
every single world leader, including America.
Yeah, exactly. but I just want to be clear for those listening. That's not necessarily what you're advocating for, because, and I just want to be clear, you're suggesting that, because we don't, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I don't trust these world leaders. I don't trust the World Economic Forum to have my best interests at heart, or humanity as a whole, their best interests at heart. I don't believe that. I don't trust these people. And I think when they say a Great Reset, like, I think they want to take it to a darker place, right? Like, yes, we need to, and they, you know, one of their catchphrases is build back better. But in order to build back better, you have to destroy something in the process. But I think what you're saying is more of a benevolent kind of, you know, the more so like a hero's journey where the hero gets knocked down. He has to face these trials and these tribulations in order to succeed in the end. And is that how you feel about it?
All great societies fall. Yeah. And great societies build up afterwards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just one of those things. When that society is falling, and if you take humanity, and when the next builds up, when, you know, Rome comes and builds upon the foundations of a society that was more complex that we know nothing about. I just think about it just in these ways that something else is coming ahead of you, and it could be something beautiful and great. I mean, the technology that we have compared to, you know, the technology of, you know, the past ages is just completely different than I'm sure the interfaces and technologies and things they were doing. So yeah, I'm not advocating for any sort of thing. I'm not even saying that we are, but you know, sometimes you don't know that the house is on fire, and then all of a sudden it's up and gone in no time, you know, but eventually that land's going to get cleared and something cooler is going to get built with better technology.
I keep saying it too, that it's going to be something where everybody splits, and there's going to be like the people that want to live in like smaller communities, like out in the country type areas. And then there's going to be the people that want to live in like the mega city type areas. And maybe that's what we're moving towards. Cause it would be the people that want to be controlled and don't want to think for themselves would all get to be in one area. And then everybody else could like self-govern themselves, which I feel like would be almost be a better future in a sense, rather than everybody kind of being mixed together, you know?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've learned, I live in Florida. It's a little more chaotic than certain parts of the country. And there's so many different eclectic people types around that, you know, there's certain types of problems and chaos that just don't happen and can't happen because there's so much chaos. And in the end, for the most part, everybody's there trying to help each other out and do the right thing. But, you know, once you get into, you know, systems where, you know, people are too aligned in their philosophies, their politics, you start to have, you know, groups that can roam the street and get away with, you know, beating people, you know, Antifa movements and just other, you know, crazy things that, you know, just are not going to survive, you know, down here. People don't get, you know, attacked for wearing, you know, the wrong logo or, you know, the wrong type of, you know, political messaging or whatever. What it's just. So in the anarchist world, I won't say I'm an anarchist, but I am much more for chaos, because in the chaos, you can find meaning and you can find order. And no matter what we try to do as a society or people, we're not swimming through the force of nature, the force of the world, the force of just people and how they act. You have to learn how to swim in the ocean. So we need to find the best way to do that. And, you know, look, groups of people care about each other. You know, go to your local restaurant for long enough and you are going to care about the person behind the counter and vice versa. They're going to become your friend. You live in a small enough community. Everybody's your friend. You're caring for each other. You're looking out for each other. That changes things. We all drive to work looking at people. We don't know who they are. We don't care. When you cut somebody off, there's no thought about what they're going through, you know, what's going on in their life, if you'll even ever see them again, because the chances of that happening are slim. So, I mean, yeah, I like the idea of smaller groups working, because in the end of that, if we're all doing that and human beings are ultimately, you know, good in my mind, if there's bad actors and bad apples that accumulate, I think the system is going to, you know, work them out.
I think it would correct itself better if they're in smaller groups rather than being mixed into the big groups, you know, because then it's like, I know it sounds kind of messed up, but then all the people that are like that can group together in a sense, and then it creates a bigger problem. Rather than if they were just one by themselves in a breakaway community, like they wouldn't end up lasting that long by themselves.
Well, let's say we have like a fracking, or take any industry that could cause environmental damage. You've got, you know, a small number of companies that are running this entire thing being controlled versus, okay, if we all had, you know, small areas of land that we were living on controlling, you know, we'd be looking at the environmental impacts, and our neighbors would be looking at the environmental impacts of our actions. And we would have so much more skin in the game than the person living on another continent who literally does not care what they destroy over here, because they've got the primo beach, the primo healthcare, you know, they're not living in the toxic cities with all of the waste from their disposal.
Even on a small scale, people just walk down the street and throw garbage in somebody's front yard because, again, they don't know who they are, so they don't give a shit about who they are.
Yeah, it's everything. It's everything. Why do we have an issue with the police? Because you don't know your police officer, because the police officer and you don't have an understanding that when they show up, and a person gets shot because they're having a mental issue and there was no weapon, well, if you actually knew your community and knew these people, there would be more trust, more knowledge, more understanding, more people actually wanting to come to you and trust you and knowing they could trust you in a system. And we've washed that out through, again, growing to a system that worked very well from where we came from, needing to build infrastructure, you know, transportation, being able to get it down so that we're not starving. We have clean water. We all have roofs over our heads. So, you know, these types of things, we've conquered the world so that we don't worry about wild animals attacking us. We worry about whether or not the ground is not perfectly flat and you trip on a sidewalk and need to sue somebody. I mean, it's a weird fucking world we're in. Sorry, I don't know where I was going with that.
No, you know, I was just going to say, Adam, it kind of goes back to what you mentioned earlier about epigenetics, right? We came from that kind of tribal community, that tribal mindset. And those, you know, once you get to know your community a little bit, let's say you live in a big city, but even if you just get to know the people in your little neighborhood or borough, it makes a big difference, right? I go back to what's that movie, Biodome, with Pauly Shore and one of the Baldwin brothers, where he's like,
Biodome,
think globally, act locally. You know, it's like it's, you know, if you think about all the problems going on in the world, but you apply that to what you can control, one, just getting to know the people around you, right? Like I got new neighbors recently, and I've done my very best to try to get to know them, right? Like, hey, come over for a cookout. Hey, do you need any help moving in? Do you need help? Like, do you have issues in the house? Like, is there anything I can help with? And just because I know, for me, if shit hits the fan, I can't go to my family or my friends across the state. I got to rely on the people around me, right? And the last thing you want when shit hits the fan is hungry neighbors, right? So you gotta work together, right? And so it kind of goes back to that tribal kind of like what you mentioned, the epigenetic memory of just like getting to know the people in your vicinity, whether it's your city, your town, your community, your neighborhood, or even just your street, just getting to know those people. And whether you agree or disagree or whatever, it, at least come to an understanding. You know what I mean? That can go a long, long way. Even if it's not, let's say it's not an apocalyptic situation, but like, let's say you just, you know, need some help with something, right? And you know a neighbor who is a mechanic or knows how to change a tire or, you know, things like that. That kind of community can really go a long way. And then if you scale that up to, hey, you know how to rewire a house, or I know how to build a house. Like, so when shit does hit the fan, like, you know, people who can continue, you know, work in that and rebuild without having to rely on some sort of larger system to come in and save you.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to say, jumping off of that one too, because I feel like it's a good question to ask after all of that conversation. If there was one thing you guys could change about society, what would it be? Okay. I guess we'll start with Bill, since he hasn't talked in a minute.
I'm scrolling back through my notes to see if I had that question when I went through it. But let's see. One thing that I would change, probably the way we get around in relation to transportation. Like, not to say that, you know, I think electric vehicles are a good idea, because I don't. But I do think that we're using antiquated technology, and that there's probably something better out there to use. I know that there are certain engines and things you can do to cars to make them run on hydrogen, and I think that's super interesting.
Water.
And so I think that there can be a whole industry built around that, and I'm sure that there's tons of jobs, you know, taken into consideration, like just retrofitting old vehicles or manufacturing new ones that actually use this technology. It can be so much more, like, if you're really going to be like a big Green New Deal or whatever, like, maybe we should actually look at something that actually works, you know, not driving these 300-mile radius vehicles where people get they get to, what do they call it? It's a radius anxiety or return anxiety. It's basically buyer's remorse after buying one of these.
It keeps you in your area.
Yeah.
Like, you can't go far. You know what I mean? It's a control mechanism. And I don't think they're any better for the environment, except maybe the emissions. But even then, it's not significant enough compared to someone told me one time, and I believe this person, they said that if you're talking about just your carbon footprint in general, it is better. It is a less of a carbon footprint to just drive the car you already own until you can't drive it anymore than to buy a new car, whether it's a new efficient car or electric or whatever, because the carbon footprint it takes to make a car is more than it ever takes to actually drive the car throughout its lifetime. So, but you mentioned transportation in general. I've just noticed this in my town. We've got these little fucking scooters everywhere that are just annoying.
And dude, we had those things in Detroit, and now they're starting to come up to all the suburbs. They're like all over people's front yards. Oh, well,
people just dump them wherever. They throw them off of bridges, throw them in drainage ditches. I mean, it's absolutely insane. But I think obviously their intentions are good. They want to, you know, make things a little easier. But I agree with you, Bill. There's got to be something. I mean, we hear about, you know, for some reason, anytime someone comes up with a cure for cancer or a way to, you know, make a efficient car, they always end up with two to the back of the head for whatever reason.
The problem is it's control, because, you know, they're making money off of people using gas. If people are, you know, using electric cars, they could theoretically shut them off whenever they want. They're still making money off of people having to charge them. If they started making cars where they ran on water, there's like anybody could go to any water source and have like an endless supply of fuel, essentially. So then you lose that control over the people. So that's why I think it's like one reason why they'll never continue to try to push that, and why everybody who comes up with things that work like that end up, like you said, with two to the back of the head.
Yeah. Anything else, Bill, on the transportation? I'm curious, why did you choose that for one thing you changed? Do you think it would just kind of smooth things over in general if people could get around a little easier?
Well, it's funny you mentioned driving our vehicles before we can't anymore, because I'm pretty much at that point with my Jeep right now.
Good luck, dude. Good luck finding a new car right now.
You can get parts. You're good, Bill. It's old enough. Start swapping out. Start going to the junkyard. Buy a Shelton's manual. You'll be good.
That's what I used to do with my Jeep for a hot minute. That thing I got to, like, before I got into a car accident with it, I had that thing at like 300,000 miles.
Shit, dude. Jeez. Jeez, man. That's crazy. I'm almost at 200 in my F-150, and we'll see how long it takes. I've had no issues, but dang, your Jeep, dude. Bill, good luck finding a new or used vehicle right now.
Yeah,
maybe take Adam's advice and just start scrounging for parts.
Right. I've done a little bit of maintenance to it, but it's just, I don't know. It's got electrical issues, and there's body, like frame damage. So
there's bodies, Bill. We edit that. No, why are you trying to get rid of this truck again? I made you a new co-host, guys.
The blood stains. Yes. I can't get rid of the smell. I did hear from somewhere that if you buy a car pre-1979, there's no like electronics in it. Besides like the radio, so you can really they're easier to fix yourself. They are more reliable when it comes to like EMP or, you know, some sort of attack, but obviously they're harder to find. I mean, those are 40-year-old vehicles, so that's what I've heard.
Plus, just they're going to be gas guzzlers, you know. Everything back then was big, you know, just because it didn't really matter. Gas was super cheap. Mm-hmm. You are right. If an EMP or something attacks, so your starter is going to get knocked out. So even just to start it, you know, you're going to need some sort of like air compressor start likely. The real trick, I mean, if you want the entire system to be hardened, it essentially needs to be like a diesel pre-1950s machine that only has glow plugs on it to be able to withstand too high electrical. So yeah, even with that, don't buy a Tesla, but stick with a modern car. It's probably not going to get knocked out. Or everything's probably going to get knocked out anyways.
Yeah, good point.
We'll have to go back to the old original self-driving car, the horse.
Hey, I'm in Texas. I can find out. There's horses in the field across from my house.
You know what's cool about a horse? You own a horse. It knows where you live. You get drunk on the horse and you fall asleep. It's going to drive you all the way back home on its own, and you don't have to program it.
Shit.
And you get to become friends with your car.
Hey, you listen, do you know what it runs on? Grass. Most environmentally friendly thing ever. What does it do? It shits out fertilizer. What are we short on? I will solve the vehicle crisis right now. Mustangs.
Yes. wild Mustangs. Oh, that's great. That's great. But hey, you're not wrong. We could end up in a position where, because what was that? The Walking Dead, right? With the sheriff in that, and I think in the first episode.
He's riding the horse around.
That show is old now, but yeah, he tries to start a car. He tries to do all this stuff. Nothing works. He fucking hops on a horse and he rides his happy ass all the way to, you know, outside out of Atlanta.
I think for the average person too, it'd be definitely easier to rebreed horses than to try to figure out a car and get it to work for, you know, as long as your lifetime goes on.
Only that, gasoline, you know, you're going to have to get something to run to purify. There's a lot of technology involved in that, pumping it out of the ground. Plus, if you really consider like an oh shit, like we get wiped out, you know, sun, massive solar burst fries all non-hardened systems on the planet, which is all electrical grids, basically all computers, anything not completely encased within a Faraday cage. And then it destroys all the equipment you build equipment with, every single motor. You know, okay, you blew out all your transformers, even if they're sitting protected. Here in South Florida for a hurricane, FP only keeps between like 150 and 250 transformers on site at a time. Even if it was a light issue where it hit the United States, you know, and we lose, you know, 20 or 40% of all electrical systems, every car, every plane that's flying. I mean, that alone is going to completely destroy farming equipment, the grid, like everything across the board, your power plants, the water's not going to run. So small, minor events like the Carrington event that have happened before. I don't know. Scary, especially since we're coming right into the next solar maximum. And we're, you know, looking to ramp up here end of September going through early next year.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that. Oops, sorry.
So I was going to say we've been in a minimum for a while, right?
Yep. For a while. But the new cycle has started. So
go ahead, Shane. Sorry.
No, you're good. I was going to say, going back to the horses too, that's another thing you'd end up needing horses for. If you didn't have farming tools to be able to actually like plow fields, do things like that, you'd have to go back to the horses again to be able to plow the field. And again, fertilizer, because while they're plowing, it's dropping right into the garden. We all just need to go back to having horses. That should be another thing that gets, it's on the checklist for for preppers, you know?
I will say I've lived in Texas most of my life. And when I moved out of state, the joke was, oh, did you ride your horse to school? No, I didn't. I grew up in like a suburb of Dallas. But now where I live out in West Texas, I mean, literally people ride their horses places. I mean, it's just part of it. Because
you know who's going to be fine? The Amish.
Oh, my God. You're not wrong.
The Ted Kaczynskis, right? The cult leaders. They'll be fine.
Oh, my. You're absolutely right, dude. Have you seen the kind of sped up videos of them building a barn in a day and then moving it? Not only building it, but then they build it. We're in the wrong spot. And they literally just fucking pick the thing up and move it. I mean,
yeah, my family's from Slippery Rock, Pennsylvania. I grew up around, grew up going and seeing the Amish all the time. So, yeah, they are a special breed of people.
Honestly, I've really thought about it. Like, okay, if anything, should I start integrating with the Amish? Because it seems like they're
pretend you have amnesia, show up with a beer, you're just all dressed up. That would be amazing.
I think the beard would be my biggest down. I cannot grow a beard to save my life, but I could at least, you know,
you're right. No beard, because you need to pretend you're single.
Yeah, that's true. You got to just slide out of the cornfield one day during dinner and just sit down and start eating and see how long it takes anybody to notice you.
Yeah. I mean, but seriously though, Adam, you make a good point. The Amish have got their shit together. They didn't get COVID. They didn't get, they don't deal with elections or, you know, political drama or even social drama. They don't give a shit about Roe v. Wade. They don't care about any of that stuff. The Amish and the Native Americans, I guess the Native Americans have probably been more targeted when it comes to, issues in the community. But the Amish, they seem like they've got their shit together. And the Mennonites, too. They know what's going on and they make some great food.
Oh yeah. You want, their stands are amazing. It's one of the best things about going up to rural PA is in that Ohio area is just hitting all the stands.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, dude. I mean, so I went to school for acting and musical theater and things like that. And one of the big draws for my, because it was in the Midwest, and there's actually some Amish musical writers that have started Amish theaters in like the more touristy Amish areas, like in Ohio and Pennsylvania and stuff. And this one lady has written, I don't know, probably 10 full-blown musicals about Amish life and Amish culture. And a lot of my friends actually got jobs in the Amish theater. It's very interesting because it's a new show. It's new, you know, it's great for young actors. But man, there's literally nothing around. So it's not like getting a job in New York City and, you know, as an actor and you kind of have that style, but it's like, no, there's one bar outside of town and then the rest is just Amish. But I've visited obviously several times and man, it was great. It was fun. It was
one of the cool things about the Amish that most people, I guess they kind of get shoehorned into groups, you know, movies like Sex Drive with Rammstein and all these other things, which are real things, but every Amish sect is to its own with its own set of rules. There are generalizations, you know, not wanting to have photographs, not all, you know, the not dealing with technology is another one that I find interesting. It's actually not no technology. They will use technology, but they're not going to buy and plug into the power grid and, you know, be part of these other systems. They will barter for things. They will have a generator that they use and maintain through bartering and through other things and means. And, you know, if you show up on their job, yeah, they might not have all their own equipment, but when they show up, like, one of my family members had the same thing. He had him replank and redo his entire barn. And he shows up and he's like, hey, he's like, I see you have a chainsaw. Can I use it? He's like, sure thing. Did all the cutting and everything with the chainsaw for the entire thing. So it's a completely different philosophy on life. And they are certainly not all the same. Every group is a little bit different. So yeah, they're just it's a very interesting experience to have somebody who is, you know, will not engage in the contracts, but will use your cell phone to make a call.
It is kind of a weird concept. I was about to ask that too, because you was talking about the Amish theater. I was going to ask if they like didn't use electricity within the theater, but that you're describing that.
They use lights and sound and microphones and stuff.
Yeah, I've gone into Amish places where you do things very traditionally, but for the steaming, for the bending, you know, for some of the nailing and cutting and some of the stuff, they'll use, you know, modern air-powered pneumatic equipment, which is great. Why wouldn't you utilize the world? Because, you know, it's the same thing as a hand saw. An engine is just articulating and manipulating this metal, you know, into doing your bidding with energy. It's just like having a fire. You've just utilized it to a much greater capacity, you know, through integrating the stuff properly. So, yeah, you know, there's a lot of interesting things about their culture that I truly enjoy. Because we're all stuck in cages, right? We're all tied to these systems and debts and, you know, things that can get us going in jail and, you know, what we're worried about socially and things going on and tickets and traffic. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, they're out there just going point A to point B, you know, horse and carriage, you know, just making ends meet, feeding the family. It's, I don't know. It's,
I'm almost envious of life. People no that American take life can. That slow.
I guess they're Americans too, but yeah.
I'm almost envious of people who can take life that slow, because like you'll see them just riding down the road and it's like you wish you could just take the time to just ride a horse and buggy all the way somewhere and not be worried about the time and how fast you're trying to get there and actually be able to, like, you know, if say you're a farmer, because that'd be part of being Amish, of course, I'm assuming, like actually being able to like spend that time in your field and not have to worry about like, oh, I got to work this job too in order to support myself, because like having a little farm isn't enough to be able to support you and yourself in a normal, like in the normal world. At least right now, unless you have like a full size giant farm, you know,
they don't got to worry about money or debt or things like that. And it's interesting. It seems like, you know, that we looking at them and that they're still around after all these decades and perhaps hundreds of years. It makes you think like, did we miss something along the way, you know?
Definitely feels like it, because everybody kind of has that empty spot in them where they kind of just know that society isn't what it should be. You know
what you were saying about like the speed, right? I mean, just think about like when you're driving in your car down the highway, like when are you ever driving where you're not in some sort of rush, right? How many of us actually go the speed limit? If not, like, you know, we usually go like five over, at least here in Texas. It's like an unspoken rule. You can go five over, no problem.
I feel like that's nationwide. It's the five over rule, because it's the same up here in Michigan.
Yeah. So it's like, why, you know, it's almost like that thing of like stop to smell the roses. Whereas like the people like the Amish, they're always smelling the roses. Like they don't have to stop to smell the roses because they are always smelling them. You know, it's interesting. And it makes me a little envious, but also at the same time, like it's nice to, you know, have air conditioning and, you know, the luxuries of modern society.
But I guess if you aren't used to those luxuries, you wouldn't miss them.
Yeah, good point. Good point. It's like, have you guys watched that new documentary, What is a Woman? Have y'all watched that? No. From The Daily Wire with Matt Walsh?
I have it on my list. I haven't actually gotten to it yet, though.
I found a YouTube link of it. I'll try to send it to you later. But he, at some point in the documentary, he goes to, I think, the Zambia or maybe the Congo, and talks to these tribes. And he's trying to explain to these tribes, like, because he's like, I've asked everyone in America and no one could give me an answer. So maybe I need to get out of America. So he goes to these African tribes and he's like, what is a woman? And they're like, someone who gives birth. You know, and he's like, well, over in my country, that's not what that is. And he's like, the tribes are like, that's ridiculous. And he's like, would you want these people who are poverty struck and downtrodden by our standards? He asks them, would you want to live in America based on this information? And they're all like, fuck no. Like, y'all are crazy, you know? So it's. And I imagine the Amish don't have to deal with that as well. You know, it's just first world problems, as they say.
Yeah, exactly. And they only exist because we make them exist, because, you know, we create our own problems. Like, that wouldn't be a problem if our society was still based around. I'm not saying like our society should be based around any specific religion, but like it holds you tighter to like a system of standards if a society is based on a religion such as like Mormon, or not Mormons, but Amish. Mormons, I guess, also would fit Mormons into that one too, but
do pretty well. You know, I've never met a Mormon who wasn't a very nice and successful person, you know.
I mean, they're still living within normal society, but I guess they do kind of have their own set mindset, where they're not worried about these problems that we're dealing with right now, because they're like kind of in their own.
They're like, we're going to get our own fucking planet. Who cares what happens to with climate? They're like, fuck this shit. man. So what else, guys? What else has been going on? I don't mean to like change subjects abruptly, but anything, Bill or Adam, that's kind of been on your minds that you want to address? Or maybe we can just, you know, make some dick jokes about. I mean, what's been going on?
I'm going to let Bill speak, because I feel like my microphone's getting worn out.
Okay. Yeah, sorry, Bill. We've been kind of yelling over you. Sorry, bud. Just speak up. Speak up. Just yell at us.
Jump
up and wave.
To continue the Amish / Mormon thing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, I knew a Mennonite couple who owned a credit union when I was growing up. So that was an interesting crossover. I worked for them for a number of years. Nice people. But yeah, they get into the banking game, which kind of gave me a unique perspective, especially as I got older and realizing what the Fed actually is. So yeah, that was interesting. Other things that have been happening.
Well, I mean, we can go into that a little bit too. Why did you ever ask them why you Mennonite, this Mennonite couple, did you ever ask them why they got into the modern banking system? I mean, it seems to me like that is counterproductive.
That's what I was going to say.
Well, one of them converted. It was a split, like
they
foresee. Right. And so one of them converted. I don't remember all the details because it was a long time ago and they were quite a bit older than me. But it was married in, and then someone converted, but they were still like part of the church, because I got to go to their church a few times. And started out with accounts with AM General. AM General's big factory in that area. So they was just small credit union just for those employees, and then just kind of grew out from there to serve the underserved people, on the poor people on the west side of town is where they had their headquarters, in a very poor area, South Bend, and just kind of grew out from there. But yeah, they were just wonderful people. I actually wouldn't mind having the husband of that couple on the show if he's still alive, which I'm sure he is. But I remember staying, my parents, they were close family friends of mine, right? So my parents went out of town one time, and I remember staying over at their house, and I got up in the morning to get ready to go to school or work or something, and I see him laying on the floor in the dark in the living room, right? I'm walking into the kitchen, and I kind of stop and backtrack, double take, and go on about my business. And then he kind of explains to me later that he's his own chiropractor. So he's doing his floor stretches in the morning, part of his routine when he gets up. And this guy has always had gray hair and Coke bottle glasses. I don't know if he had hearing aids since I've known him, but he's just always been this older gentleman that's in extremely good condition mentally. He's sharp as a tack and physically. So that's kind of a role model growing up. I was around him a lot. So yeah, that's interesting. Like I said, just interesting crossover from Mennonites and Amish people. There's two different things, I would say, I think.
But similar, right? Well, yeah. I like what you said too, that they went into it wanting to help people, not necessarily wanting to just make money as most bankers do. And it's interesting that they started a local bank trying to help the people in the local factories and the poorer populations. I mean, obviously that's a great motivation or incentive to start a bank. But I like what you said earlier about the Fed too. Like, do they understand what the Fed really is, what the Federal Reserve represents, and how it is almost counterintuitive to their way of life? But it seems like they were just trying to help people and, you know, be part of the community. Because I assume even the Amish people, they might be one community, but they perhaps have there's probably one guy who manages the money, right? I'm sure they have some sort of cash flow from the furniture they sell or the crops they barter. So
they still need to buy wooden supplies. So yeah, I'm assuming so.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's interesting. And what are y'all's thoughts on, I can guess, but what are y'all's thoughts on kind of the whole Federal Reserve system? Do you think that we're seeing the downfall of the Federal Reserve based on the amount of printing and fuckery that's been going on? Or do you think a lot of people are still just like, oh, okay, you know, print more money? What are y'all thought? I have my opinions, but what are y'all
things thought? Are changing. You know, people, discount Bitcoin and just calling it, you know, throwing it with all the other cryptocurrencies or shit coins out there. But really what you're looking at with all that is a system that cannot be taken down. This thing was built in such a way that you can always use it as an exchange of value, regardless of going up or down. It is outside the control of this larger system. So, you know, just the fact that even exists in the world, that people are even adopting the idea that they can come up with different currencies, new currencies, other ways of exchanging value. These are high-end ways of bartering. And when I think about society, I think about one of the great ills is how do we value things? You know, like in the environment does not come first. We put money and profit first, but if we put the environment first as our priority, the space that we are living in, then cost would not matter. Those kind of prices wouldn't matter. It would be the most environmentally balanced, you know, biodegradable solution. We would all be using, you know, biodegradable plant-based plastics, more, you know, washable, recyclable systems, even if it doesn't make sense. Yes, we can recycle way, way more than we do. It is not cost effective. Therefore, we don't. But what if we did? We would not have all the things that we're at. And so as we go forward, things like these new forms of currencies and exchanges and ways of thinking, and we're at the very beginning, are going to give people the tools and the power. And you're already seeing it because right now, you know, people are spending a lot of money to support podcasters and people that they get their entertainment from. They see the value. We're in a new generation where, you know, people are willing to pay somebody because of what they're getting and want to support that. And once that philosophy, I think, you know, kind of bakes in and becomes more of how people just do things, and we have better things. I mean, you see the Lightning Network and Lightning Nodes going into podcast 2.0 and all of the stuff that's going in that with the crypto, so that people can do microtransactions and boosts with what they're listening to, you know, and doing, you know, breaks. And these are all able to be exchanged in and out for Bitcoin. So yeah, they'll go up and down, but regardless, it is an exchange of value. And it is a value where people are exchanging based on the real engagement that they're having on a level outside of the system. There is no third party middleman. There's only the person running the wallet or the infrastructure. And if you have the technology to do that on your own, then you can do it. So just that whole philosophy, you know, of people being able to use these, you know, systems that cannot be taken down. So yeah,
value baby. I mean, decentralization of all, I know I jumped into the end there, but I had a feeling of what you were going into. But yeah, man, I think that's the way forward, that value for value kind of, it's almost an anarchist type of mindset where it's, you know,
it's like anti-corporation.
It's like kind of the idea behind voluntarism, you know, like I'm voluntarily participating in interactions with you, whoever that may be, whether it's the government or whether it's a business or whether it's another individual. All of our interactions are voluntary. I'm not being forced to participate, but rather I'm choosing to because it benefits both of us, right? And whether that is in the form of podcasting or content creation or running a business, I mean, there's, I think, Adam, you said it right. A lot of people are waking up. They're seeing that, hey, my money is being devalued. My government doesn't have my best interests at heart. The systems that I once trusted no longer serve me. And
where do people get their news? They're not paying attention to the mainstream media. They're getting it from people online. And this is what's great. The technology and the access has become so great. Hollywood's collapsing. Entertainment has become very easy for people to create good quality content and distribute it. As were before, you would have to go through the network, through the advertisers. It's called a soap opera because they were there to sell soap. If it went against what the advertiser wanted, you weren't doing it. So, you know, we live in a much freer world. It seems more constrained. But I think as people are going into this, you know, it just drives them more into that. If I have a garden, I need to water the garden. And if I see these forms of entertainment, I have the ability to directly give them value. I want to make them grow. I think people are starting to realize, you know, that if they want something, they need to pay for it. And nobody wants things for free. You know, you get stuck with shitty algorithms, control mechanisms, things listening to you. Why is Facebook being driven away from? It is the most effective form of targeted advertising. It is incredibly good. You know, it offers, you know, this experience that everybody and their friends was on, but somehow those algos still are driving people away. You know, and as our other platforms are coming up that people are paying for, that they're integrating with, it's like, I don't know. It's different. And as we start to get out the centralized systems, things to back to what we were talking before, groups like the Fed, they're going to fight harder. You know, we're going to see them introducing their own cryptocurrencies. We're going to see a battle on the financial order that's totally different. But, you know, to me, this is just a new evolution. It's a new way of doing things. It's a new way of valuing. And I think people are ready for a new way of valuing where I control the value. And now with the technology, here's what's great. If I have a Lightning wallet and you have a Lightning wallet and we buy into crypto, I can give you value no matter what directly without a middleman. And nobody can ever take that away from us as long as we keep our. And so, like, these are just amazing concepts. And then if you add on to that, that money is a hallucination, it is a fucking piece of paper that you and I have agreed is worth $20. And we agree what that value is between. But if all of us decided to change what that value of that paper was, everything would change. So that's being given back to us. It's being put into our hands. And, you know, people should really look into the fact that, you know, it's not cryptocurrency. All cryptocurrencies are built differently. And Bitcoin truly is different than the others in from the ground up, it was built to not be exploitable.
Honestly, and it kind of gives me hope for society in a sense too, that we're kind of starting to move into that type of direction too. Cause it's like, it may not be local in that sense, but it's local in the sense of, like he was saying, like, I'm dealing with you directly rather than going through like a big corporation to do something. Cause everybody wants content, or they want everything around in their life to be specialized to them at this point. They're kind of tired of like the, here's the generic for everybody, especially because the generic for everybody is getting so outrageous that majority of people don't want anything to do with it anymore. And they just want everything to be how they want it. And people are starting to realize that it's okay that you don't follow the mainstream narrative of things. Like, it's okay to have this opinion, that opinion. And like, we can all get along within different groups. But like, if we keep pushing towards that woke agenda, they tell you who to be mad at. And then we're just going to have conflict no matter what, because that's the message they're trying to push, is anger towards everybody else who disagrees with that concept. But if enough people are outside of that concept, then I feel like there'd be a lot more peace amongst people.
And it lets us cut people out of the loop very easily. If I want to support you as a podcaster, I don't necessarily want to support Visa and the other things that they're doing to other people, or PayPal and some of their company policies or the things that they're doing. But yet I'm forced into those other systems to support you through these other networks, when really we don't really need to rely on those networks. You know, those systems don't have to be there. People are getting and building their own things. And another beautiful thing that's, I think, is really pushing this, you know, we have more freedom of voice than we have ever had before. You know, almost without exception, we can say anything on this podcast, and we can still publish it out there. We can still have an RSS feed. We can get deplatformed off of the Apple feeds, but Alex Jones still has a site that's accessible and people can still listen to him. And we live in this world where, like, we're very, very lucky. And although those walls are closing in, considering those walls weren't squeezed so tight decades ago, and we still have more freedom, I don't know. I've got a lot of hope.
I mean, honestly, though, what we're doing right now would have been pirate radio like 30 years ago, and it wouldn't be legal. So you're not wrong in that extent too. And I mean, if it wasn't for the internet, because it's like a double-edged sword, like, we wouldn't be able to inspire people to kind of follow their own endeavors or to learn things for themselves. So it's a good medium to have just because of that aspect.
Well, and it kind of ties back into what we were talking about earlier with like your local community. With this technology of the internet, our communities can be not necessarily physically local to us, but they can be local to us in the online sense. Like what Adam was saying, like, I can support you, Shane, even though we live over 1,000 miles away from each other. We can still connect on that level, where it's individual to individual, it's person to person, which I think is great. I think that's true decentralization, not just on a local level with your community, but using the tools that we have in this modern age to extend our community and our reach all over the place, because that's more decentralization as well. Mm-hmm. And then also, I liked what Adam was saying. It made me think, like, when your refrigerator starts ordering your groceries for you, we may have a problem, right? Mm-hmm. As it's like, it's almost as if like convenience is no longer a selling point. I mean, obviously it still is for many, many things, right? Like, Zoom is very convenient. We can all get together and have this conversation through Zoom. That's convenience, but it's almost like we're getting too far one way. So we need to kind of find that balance where, like, okay,
yeah, can't do things for themselves anymore because right. They're so used to the convenience.
Right. Like, I think, to me, going to the grocery store is inconvenient. I hate going to the fucking Walmart. It's terrible. I want to kill myself every time I step in the doors. So I order my groceries online, but I still have to decide what I want. You know what I mean? It's not like the refrigerator is making the orders, or Alexa or whatever is fucking making the stuff show up at my door. It's like, I still have to do that. So there's a balance there, right? Because I'm not physically going to the store, but I'm not letting someone else decide what my groceries are in the first place. So that's obviously a little tangent. I didn't mean to, you know, derail the conversation, but it's interesting. Like, your toaster does not need to be connected to the internet. You know what I mean?
Well, one thing, just to jump back a little bit on what you were saying, that I love the how connected people are and how important community is to us, because as society has grown into these larger groups and cities, and we're, you know, constantly in this pace of, you know, running the treadmill just to put food on the table and doing all this busy work and paperwork in society, you know, through all that, we are still finding community in those niche groups, finding people like us, finding communities, you know, all across, you know, so many spectrums. You know, if it's a creator on Halo with his community, it's been putting out work for years, gets diagnosed with cancer, it's going to cost tens of thousands of dollars. Within a day, it's raised by the community because they truly care about this person, that people like, yeah, like, why wouldn't I help this person? We have that connection. And it's beautiful that that technology is coming to the point that we can all start to group connect and come together. And it's even beautiful because it's going to start bringing in like it is other cultures, and not so much, you know, like, no, if you were to ask most Americans or most Russians, you know, do you hate, you know, a person in Russia? Do you want them to die? No. Do you dislike the government? This and that? Maybe, maybe, maybe. But fundamentally, we're just people. And we understand that, you know, we're under the silo of our government. And we can circumvent that, you know, as we start making those connections, it starts to become, you know, World War II in the trenches on Christmas, or was it World War I? It was when they, yeah. So, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you pause for, you know, a holiday, and then you start meeting, you start sharing stories, you get to know each other. And next thing you know, you refuse to fight, and everybody's got to get pulled out on both sides because nobody's going to kill each other. And technology is making those connections. It's slow. You know, the world's crazy. It's chaos. This isn't going to happen overnight. If we can make it through 100 years, maybe. But considering where we are now to 100 years ago, I mean, just look, go back at early film from the 1900s. You know, people getting, you know, beating women, kicking dogs, you know, terrible things on film that were normal, just normal, not just normalized, normal. And we just can't see the forest from the trees. It's pretty damn good in America right now.
Yeah. Despite all of the craziness, you're absolutely right. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, you got to fight your kids off from the government. It's a new battle. But let's be honest, these things have always been along with us. We're just, you know, as we get more advanced and more smarter, we get better tools. The biggest one's communication. Right now, yeah, what's happened is before you got the official story and barely anything else. Now you get the complete official story. You get the complete unofficial story with the hidden truths, and then you get complete bullshit. And now it's your job to sort it out, but at least you have access to it.
True.
Yeah. Discernment is key in anything, right? Regardless, whether it's your information you're taking in, whether it's your relationships, whether it's your work or your family life, no matter what it is, discernment is key, and it's not easy to do.
Just to piggyback on your, I mean, I'm going to agree with you right there. That's absolutely true. But the internet of things, you mentioned like your toaster being a smart toaster or whatever. Like,
it's still going to burn my toast no matter how smart it is.
You know, you're going to piss it off and it's going to intentionally burn your toast.
The little Darth Vader helmet won't come out quite right. But you can tell that we're absolutely, I think we're on the cusp, like we're about to see a turning point, because we have the internet of things, right? Like our smart toasters, our smart refrigerators, like whatever, like the next step. And we can, okay, so we can see with the, I'll finish with this thought first. We're at the tail end of the internet of things age, I would like to believe, because we see things getting more opulent, right? Who needs a toaster connected to the internet? Nobody, right? Mm-hmm. You can see that things become opulent right before they become obsolete. Like when trains were a big thing, everybody was all excited about the steam engine, right? It became very fancy and very, you know, rich and luxurious. And then the car came out, right? Nobody cared about steam engines anymore. We can kind of say the same thing with aviation, especially with airships, but we can see it in airplanes too. People used to get dressed up to go on these things, right? And now we just kind of take them for granted. But so this is like the progression of technology, and we introduce the internet, and everything is connected, the internet of things. But I think what we're going towards, or what powers that be want us to go towards, are an internet of people where we start microchipping ourselves. And I think that is going to be, I mean, conquer and divide, right? Like that's been their playbook for a while now. But I don't think that the majority of people are going to go along with being injected with a microchip that can do God knows what.
You're basically that, Bill. You're already a cyborg. right? You've got wires connected to your head, interfacing magnetic frequencies to an electronic device. You carry around a supercomputer in your pocket that guides you around, that listens to you, communicates your location. Like, we are fully integrated with computers, whether it's the watch you've been wearing since the 80s. And we are on this slow progression. And of course, you lose your eyesight. You're going to get a bionic eye. These things are happening. And, you know, it's not surprising. You know, the natural world is being infused by mankind. I mean, just look at how much of the world is covered with concrete. That used to be environment. That used to be rivers and swamps and ecosystem. Now it is dead ground. It is getting filled with electronics and wires and, you know, infrastructure, magnetic fields. So yeah, we're in a way, if you think of like how coral can populate the ocean, I mean, we are building things in a much similar way, creating chemical substances, you know, reforming rocks all over the planet. We're rebuilding this place to something new. And that technology, yeah, it's linking together. It's certainly going to become part of us.
Think about like, it reminds me of like the Borg ships from Star Trek Next Generation, right? These ships are literally just like cubes of technology, and they're as big as planets or whatever it is. They're these massive things. There's nothing natural about it, but yet it sustains life somehow, right? And then you mentioned cyborgs too. I mean, the definition of cyborg is a man, nature intertwined with technology. So you could argue that the first time a man picked up a stick and beat a fucking chicken with it, he became a cyborg, right? Because he was using the technology as an extension of himself. So I see three of us on camera right now. We're all wearing glasses. Technically, we are cyborgs at that point, because this may be an old, simple technology, our glasses, but it's still going back to that definition of man interfacing with technology is what a cyborg is. So as Adam pointed out, it's only a matter of time before it progresses to a point where, things might be too far gone. Like you mentioned, concrete everywhere. Back in the, ancient times, they didn't necessarily use concrete as much. I know the Romans did, but they used stone. They used actual stone and just shaped it and formed it and moved it to where they needed it to be. God knows how. That's a mystery in itself, how they did this thing with these massive stones. But I'm just saying there's ways to do what we're doing now with a little bit more natural method of doing things, right? If we went back to actual stonework and masonry, it may not, because I work in construction. So a mason versus a concrete guy, two different pay grades, right? Mm-hmm. A concrete guy is just mixing shit up in a fucking truck and pouring it out. Whereas a mason is more of a skilled labor that's actually using stone and manipulating it to produce something that perhaps concrete could do faster and cheaper. So it's interesting just to think about, the concept of cyborgs and how far back that actually goes.
And I mean, they're already, even in a more literal sense too, instead of looking at it from like, just technology in the most like basic definition of it, like people have like pacemakers, things like that already. Like that's literally infused into your body. So that's pure definition of a cyborg, even by like sci-fi standards at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's happening. It's happening. I don't necessarily, not want to go into that future. I'd like it to be more sustainable. I'd like our, answer to everything not to be to dump it into the ground and forget about it, because, we're living in a fishbowl. Everything we create, if you make it, like when I go into the store, I'm terrified at the aisles of soap and pesticides and chemicals, because I know those have been produced, and it's just like, go and dump them in the ground, go and dump them in the ocean. What is in those things? It's absolutely terrifying. And if you just look at like C4, the chemical originally used in Teflon products, is so ubiquitous in our environment. Teflon's great. It doesn't react with stuff, which means it lasts forever. It's sustaining forever. this chemical is in every single human being's body. If you want to find groups of people that don't have it in their body, you have to go back to blood samples from World War I before this stuff started to be produced in the 40s and 50s.
C4, like the explosive?
Oh, did I say C4? Maybe it's C8. I should probably get that. There's a great documentary, a great documentary that goes into this called The Devil We Know. And it's about the entire Teflon industry. Okay. But just when you take just that one individual thing that we know is having these horrific effects on the body, we're not going to be easily able to get it out of the environment. You know, the ways that they suggest are, you know, filtering with systems that use plasma. So you're talking, you know, heat in excess of the temperature of your sun in the sun to neutralize this stuff.
I mean, I think something.
But now you have every year over 2,000 new chemicals being made and produced. And then add that into every process, every chemical. What are those things? Where do they go? They're eventually ending up into our environment, our systems, our foods. And even if we stop today, that's just, it's, to me, that's terrifying. So I wish people would wake up to it.
I mean, I think part of the problem is the fact that people are only taking into consideration here and now in themselves. Like you were talking about earlier with like money and power, and that all always trumps the environment to begin with. But if people actually took into consideration the fact that their bloodlines that they care so much about are going to have to deal with the fact that everything's destroyed later on and they're trying to pull it back, I think they would actually take that into consideration and not just worry about money specifically, because, you know, everybody loves their bloodline. So like you got to take
it's out of sight, out of mind. We're like cats or little children. Everybody's sick. You know, everybody's, you know, being hurt by something. But if we don't see the immediate reaction, you just have to watch like videos of where, you know, they'll have like prepare a meal in a kitchen and they cover the chicken with black light. And it's like, then they, you know, illuminate the room and you see this incredible spread of germs around, you know, everything's fluoresced, you know, it's this mess. But if you don't see it, then you're not even thinking that if you had salmonella, your entire kitchen would be contaminated. And I think that's the entire thing about environmental toxins. They're all slow burning, slow causing, general health declines, overloading systems across the entire environment. And it's a slow burn that we don't even see. And you literally cannot see it unless you're testing for it.
I mean, even going back to plastics too, you look at like over in India and things like that, they have entire rivers that are just full of garbage plastic. And part of the problem too, is that most of the people that are producing that shit don't live in areas where they're actually seeing that kind of thing. So it's just going to the wayside and getting disposed of in these third world countries and just different random countries rather than right in the forefront of the people that are creating the garbage. So again, if they don't see their error of their way, they're never going to actually want to react to it. But if people start seeing every single river and stream in the United States full of bottles and garbage and plastics, then people probably would react a lot faster to it and actually want to do something about it.
Exactly. And we hide it well. You put your stuff into a can so you don't have to see it. It goes outside your house. A guy in a truck picks it up, takes it away. It's done for. And that's it. But meanwhile, if you're in an environment in the Amazon, you know, yeah, you are influenced by the world. You get stuff from the outside world. It comes in. But now it's no longer food in a corn husk or in a paper bag, which is biodegradable. It gets thrown into the environment. Now it's something that is made to not biodegrade for years or centuries. And yeah, then it just accumulates and builds. They don't have a whole, you know, a dump site to go put this in. There's no system for that. So yeah, it is all our problem. Like we've shit on the world so hard. It's a good thing nature grows back quick. We just got to stop, give it a chance.
I mean, part of the problem in America too, is the fact that most people think that their recyclables are actually getting recycled, but a lot of the time they're getting incinerated, destroyed, buried. The only way to really deal with recyclables is like by yourself, but like, there's only so much you can do with that shit. So you have to be conscious of like,
that's
the
true.
Type of garbage you're producing.
You can at least hold on to the fact that if you're throwing in metals like aluminum cans, which counterintuitively will get sucked up in magnetic systems, they react as well under the magnets they use, and steel is going to get sucked up. So any of those tin cans and things like that, you know, they're pulling that out of pure value and it's going to get smelted. But you're right on all the other plastics. Oh, there's food on it. Oh, there's label on it. Oh, it's not perfectly clean. Oh, the cap's attached. They're not prying all that stuff individually.
Yeah. And sorting it all. I mean, you're right. So with the metals like aluminum and scrap and steel and whatnot, most of the time that gets crushed here into like a cube, loaded on a rail, shipped to the west coast, shipped on a boat to China. They smelt it down and then they ship it back. I mean, that's not efficient at all. Like by the time it gets back here, it is not even worth the its weight as far as like the recyclability of it.
Post COVID, but they were doing that pre COVID and during COVID with chickens. Yeah. It was cheaper to take and send a frozen chicken to China to get cut up and processed and then sent back to us than it was to do the processing in America to begin with.
Yeah, which is just insane. And Shane, you mentioned about the plastic, you know, bottles. Like people, I'm sure a lot of municipalities, a lot of cities have recycling bins, right, that you can have outside your house, that you have like a green bin for your trash and then like a blue bin or something for your recyclables. Well, in the town that I grew up in outside of Dallas for 18 years, at one point we paid the extra a month to get that blue recycling bin. And then the same truck that picked up the green ones would go down the line, pick up all the green ones, and then come right back and pick up all the blue ones, put it in the same fucking truck. All you were doing was paying for that extra bin.
It's a placebo effect. It makes people feel better just because they think they're recycling. But like, I've even noticed that like my work, for example, has they're, you know, part of like the woke crowd type concept because they're starting to go corporate, but they have like recycle bins at every single facility. And everybody that works there takes out the garbage. And where do you put the recycles? Back into the fucking garbage bin. Like it makes no difference. It's just a placebo effect to look good too. I mean, a lot of people want to, virtue signal as far as like a business goes, but that's probably part of that.
For that extra bin, right? So it's just a money. It's a scam. It's a scam.
I mean, my city offers it for free, but I'm sure it goes like they have two different trucks, but they, I don't know. I don't know if I trust it like that. If anything, like you, like he was saying, I'm sure that they sort out specific things.
You should follow one of those trucks around all day till it gets and watch it end up at the dump with the rest of them.
Yeah, I bet you it probably does. They had to make people feel better at least. So they have the green truck for recyclables and then the, you know, black or burgundy truck for garbage, you know.
Having said that, paper, always highly recyclable. So put your cardboard in there. They always take that. It's recycled. It's highly valuable. I don't like to eat off of anything that's recycled or touch it just because I'm like, well, when I throw this container of oil or pesticide or what other contaminants are in this, or is that going back into my toilet paper? You know, I'm not sure I want Roundup on my butt.
Hey, don't get me started about what's going in your asshole. Okay. We had this whole conversation the other night. I recently got a little bidet attachment for my toilet. And at the same time, the same week, I got my city water report. And I'm doing all kinds of things to my butthole when I use the bidet because God knows what's in my water.
Including uranium and arsenic.
Yeah,
that was on the list.
You're going to get hemorrhoids with their own talking hemorrhoids.
Hey, Kyle. Wipe me, buddy. Don't hurt. Oh, my. Dude, okay. Jesus Christ. Well, I mean, what? Where do we go from here, Shane? Is this the end of the show?
We can call it the end, I guess.
No, it's the best. It's the best show, art show, like artwork ever for a show.
Oh, hemorrhoids on hemorrhoids. Okay, well, Shane, work on that. We'll make
saying hi, Kyle. I gotta write it in tiny, tiny text so that people will read it in that voice.
You have to make a hemorrhoid with with its own hemorrhoid. And then text. Yeah. It's like, oh my, okay. Jeez.
It's like Inception of hemorrhoids.
Is that the episode title? Hemorrhoid Inception? I think people would not take this. Was a very serious conversation that we had tonight. And I think if we labeled this hemorrhoid inception, people would get the wrong idea.
Hey, at least we kept it light at the end, though. You got to do it deep through the whole conversation, then you may leave with a laugh.
Absolutely.
So I guess at that note, I'll let you guys go first. 13 questions. Let everybody know where to come find you guys at.
Sure. The website is the best place to go. And that's just 13questionspodcast.com. It's 13questionspodcast.com. And there's no www in front of that either. I don't know if that matters or not, but yeah, that's the best place. You'll find all the social media links there, as well as episodes to listen to. You'll get some show history, as well as bios from all the hosts that have been a part of the show. And of course, our affiliate links are all there. So yeah, head on over to 13questionspodcast.com.
And then my co-host Kyle, just because, you know, this is over on my show for the first time with you helping me co-host.
Oh, well, thank you, man. This was a lot of fun. Adam and Bill, it was a pleasure to meet you guys. I'll have to get you guys on the
Big Back Action.
Thank you. I'll have to get you guys on the Big Dumb Podcast sometime. But and Shane, thank you as well for letting me co-host with you on your show. But yeah, find me on all podcast platforms, on YouTube. I'm finally at the point where if you just type in the Big Dumb Podcast, something will pop up and you can find me there. So check it out. And yeah, thank you.
Isn't that a weirdly good feeling, though, when you can look up the name of your podcast and it's one of the first things that popped up? I started doing that a couple of weeks ago, and the first two pages are all my show, and it makes me feel good, actually, you know?
And well, despite people claiming that I've stolen podcast names from other podcasters, for whatever reason, you know, there's people out there that don't understand, you know, how this works. But even when I type in, you know, just the Big Dumb, mine's the first one that pops up. So, I have respect for all the podcasters out there, but you know, the fans need to chill out a little bit. And sorry, I'm digressing into a rant, but I'll shut up and let you end the show.
No, you're good. Honestly, I didn't know that was still going on with you. I thought that was like a couple of weeks ago, but
well, it's over, but it still bugs me. You know what I mean? Oh, no. I look at that 1-star review on my podcast and I'm like, you motherfuckers. Like, it just gets me every time. Cause I'll go back and I'll go to read a new 5-star review and then I'll see that 1-star review. I'm like, you son of a bitch. So if you're listening to Big Dumb Inquiries, please go to Big Dumb Podcast and leave a 5-star review. Let's drown out that 1-star that showed up.
Sure, no, while you're at it.
A, if you're making everybody happy, you know, then you ain't doing it right. But B, it lets people know you're real, right? Like somebody actually got pissed off listening to this. It's not just everybody loves it because we're Uber fans.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a great point. That's a great point. You've made it when you have haters.
You're not wrong. And actually, shit, while you're at it, why don't you give all of us a review? Because we appreciate it. Whether you do it a good review or a bad review, either way, we still want to read it.
We want to know how people feel, right?
So I guess with that note, I appreciate all you guys for coming on the show today. We did this a little bit of a different style than the usual show, so I hope the listeners also enjoyed it. And I guess I'll catch you guys on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.